whatever we may have, when we use it in the service of the Lord and for the pleasure of the Lord. Because everything is a gift of God. Man proposes, God disposes. He gives us the air to breathe, the sunshine. He gives us the water to drink, the food to eat. He gives us our body, our strength, our intelligence. So it is natural understanding that everything we have is by the grace of God. And to be grateful for the gifts that God gives us is human civilization. And then to reciprocate with that gratitude. And the Lord presents to us His mercy in so many ways, through so many people, throughout our life. And to be grateful to God is also to be grateful to those who has given us those gifts within our life. Today, I would like to introduce all of you to two people who have given me many gifts in my life. My mother and father, they are sitting here. They have traveled halfway around the world just to meet with all of you for the next few days. I would like to share with you some of my thoughts this evening. But first of all, let us welcome them very enthusiastically to Bombay. Thank you for coming. Many thoughts come to my mind of all they have tried to do to help me since my conception within this particular body that I'm living, and all the difficulties that they endured due to my lifestyle, and how they are still such favorably loving, caring parents who are always supporting me in appreciating in whatever we are trying to do in the service of the Lord and all of you. They have performed a great miracle, actually. In the United States of America, the divorce rate is over 70% within the first 3 years of marriage. And how much it goes up as the years go by, it's very difficult. However, my mother and father, who are seated here today, they have somehow or other gone against the whole current of American society, and they have remained faithfully married now for 54 years. In America, that's probably as difficult as taking sannyas. But they have been very faithful as husband and wife and as mother and father. I remember when I was a little boy, throughout my growing up, every day when we would come home in the evening from our school and our play, mother would have incredible feast prepared. Not exactly the same things you eat. But she would work hard every night for hours to prepare a very, very satisfying dinner for everyone. And this too is very rare in America. It is the land of fast foods and going out to restaurants and frozen things that you just put in some water and it's finished. But she would very, very faithfully every single night practically year after year after year, spend hours and hours all alone cooking. She had three sons, one of which, the eldest, was very mischievous. And no servants, no maids to help, but the two of them together raised us with tremendous effort. And also, she was such a caring and sacrificing mother that all three of us knew at any time, anywhere, she was always home. She was always home waiting for us. I remember one time I was in hospital getting operation when I was about 16 years old. Now please know, America is a different culture than India. In the previous generation, their generation, practically everybody smoked cigarettes. It wasn't considered a low class, it was considered a very prestigious thing to do. In those days, people had no idea that cigarettes were not even good for your health. So it was just the common thing. And everyone knows how addicting cigarettes are. She was smoking cigarettes, like every other woman in her social arena in America, for over 20 years. And it's more difficult habit to give up than even drugs and alcohol for most people. So I was in hospital laying in bed, and she was smoking a cigarette. And I told her that this cigarette is making me sick. Can you please put it out? So she went outside the room, and she started to cry. And she said, if my smoking cigarettes is disturbing my sons, I will never smoke another cigarette in my life. And that was the last cigarette she ever smoked. So it was this type of willing to sacrifice anything for her children that made her such a exemplary mother in that sense. And also she was very clean. She really taught us cleanliness. Whoever it was, if she saw one speck of anything anywhere, she would always say, why don't you clean this? Of course we know cleanliness is next to godliness. A very, very special virtue. But one thing I remember very, very much is how she always tried to teach me to be grateful. She never wanted me to thank her for anything. She would just do everything and anything more that had to be done. But whenever I would receive something from any of the parents of my friends or any of my friends or any of my teachers, she would always say, did you thank them? Did you say thank you? Every day, wherever I would come from, she would ask what I did, and she would ask, did you say thank you to that person? Were you feeling thankful to that person? And she stressed this in my heart for so many years that gradually I understood that actually anyone who helps us in any way, at any time of our life, we should really be very, very thankful to them. So today I want to thank you for tolerating me for so many years and being such a very faithful, caring, and hardworking mother for us. And my father, he was such a faithful and dutiful man. There was nothing in the world he would not do to somehow or other make his children happy. Very hardworking, never gave up. He was a businessman. When I was 8 years old, he had a business where he was the largest seller of a particular car in all of Chicago, second biggest city in America at the time. And this particular automobile, it was the biggest disaster in the automobile industry in history throughout the world. It was called the Edsel. So he lost everything, total bankruptcy. But yet, somehow or other, by all moral and legal means, he just worked so hard and supported the family, made sure that we had everything we needed, And he worked and worked and worked. And gradually, after many years, actually after I became devotee, then his business became worth some millions of dollars. So it was a story of never giving up, no matter what things appear to be in a particular situation. And this was a very nice lesson. Also, when I would be naughty and my mother would complain that he has done like this, then he knew he had to do something to punish me, just to teach me. And every time he would do something to punish me, whatever it was, he would always, with such sincerity in his heart, he would say, "This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you." And I used to say, "How can you say like this? It's not going to hurt you, it's going to hurt me." But after some years, every time he would always say this with such sincerity, sometimes with tears in his eyes, "This is going to hurt me more than it hurts you." But I started to become much better behaved just because I didn't want to hurt him. But I remember one thing that was very special is when I was just going to college. I was going to leave home to go to college. I was driving in car with my father, and he said something to me that I have never forgotten throughout my life. He said, "You should know, my son, that whatever happens in life, I will always be here to do everything within my power to help you." He said, "It doesn't matter what you do." He said, "Whether you become a saint or whether you are in prison for murder," he said, "you should know that I'll do everything, whatever I have and whoever I am, it is yours." He said, "You should know in your life that whatever happens to you, there's somebody who give their life for you and will never ever betray you." And when he spoke that, I remember I was crying, because I knew what he was saying was true. And I tested him to the limits. And he never betrayed his words. Of course, these very precious lessons that I learned from them later on became very wonderful realizations when I came in contact with my eternal spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who taught us how to utilize everything in the service of God. And it was at that point that many of these precious gifts that I received from my mother and father could be utilized for the highest purpose in life, in the service of Srila Prabhupada, in the service of Krishna, and now by my good fortune, in the service of all of you. When I was hardly 18 years old, I had a very, very deep longing to understand God, and it was growing more and more and more. I studied religion and philosophy in college, but I came to the realization that this college will not teach me what I want to know. It is all theoretical. Life without spiritual experience is empty. Where I learned this from must have been from some previous life, because no one in my whole life ever taught me these ideas. It came from within, this burning, burning fire of desire to understand the spiritual truths of life. So I decided to go to Europe to study in the churches, cathedrals, and synagogues about philosophy and religion. I told my parents that I will be gone for 3 or 4 months, and then I will certainly be back to continue college, because I left during the summer break. Hare Krishna. So, of course, they were very worried that this young boy is going to Europe. He hardly has any money. I got a flight from New York to Luxembourg in Europe for only $65. And they knew I had practically nothing. Where was I going to stay? I have never been out of America before. So they were very much worried about me. And 3 months went by, 4 months went by, 5 months went by, and they have not heard anything from me. They didn't know where I was, whether I was dead or alive. What happened is, living in a cave in Greece and meditating on a mountain, I got the inspiration that I should go to India. I knew that they would not approve of this inspiration. So I started hitchhiking from Greece. From London, ultimately, I hitchhiked to Greece, and then I was going to India. So months went by, they heard nothing. They were so much in distress, worrying. And finally, they received an aerogram from Iran. I believe you still have those letters. Can you imagine what a shock it is for a father, for a teenage son? He received a letter from Iran after months of nothing. And that letter explained that I love you very much. I know you will never understand what I'm doing, but I must do it. I am on a search for God, and until I find the supreme truth or God, I will not return home. I will continue my travels and my search. And I am just now on the path to India. Now in America, India is not known for wonderful events like tonight at the Piramal Bungalow. The only thing we ever heard of India is poverty, disease, and snakes. Yes, that's all. The word Swami means someone who plays with snakes. And everyone's starving, and everything's filthy, dirty, and everyone has a disease. That's all anyone knows of India in America in those days. So when they received this letter, we can imagine how much suffering, terrible suffering, they had to undergo. And the worst suffering, there was no place to even reply because I was traveling through the deserts of Iran. And I told them I was hitchhiking to India. So they were in such a completely helpless situation. Some months went by, or at least weeks, perhaps months, and the next letter they received from me, I told them I was living in a cave in the jungles of the Himalayan mountains. I remember something of what it said. It was a poem. It said, I am now residing within a cave in the beautiful jungles of the Himalayan mountains in India, and a butterfly is flying ahead, chanting the holy syllable, Om. When they read this, they didn't know what is Om, and what this butterfly is chanting, Om. What is a very common thought for you was totally inconceivable to them. They thought, perhaps I'm crazy. What has happened to our son? He's living in a cave. He has a nice home here. We lived in a very small town about 30 miles north of Chicago. Very quiet, peaceful place. Practically no crime. Very friendly place. He has left here to live in a cave in the jungles of India. So my father was so worried and my mother was so disturbed, they actually went to the Indian embassy and they talked to the ambassador of India and were crying, saying, please send my son home. And the consulate general, he said, very difficult. At that time there were 600 million people in India. He said, it's very difficult to find someone among 600 million people. And if he's living in the caves of Himalayas, it's even more difficult. But still we will try. If we hear anything, then we will let you know. So he had no way to contact me because there was no post box in my cave. And sometime later he got another letter that I was living in Bodh Gaya. And I was sitting under a banyan tree, following in the footsteps of Lord Buddha, immersed in meditation. In this way, they were in a very, very helpless state, utterly frustrated parental affection. And months and almost a year later, they received a letter from me. In the top of the letter, usually I would just say a few words, very short. I would just share with them some spiritual experience. And because I was a young teenage person, I was thinking that they would be enlightened. I would just say some mantra and think that they will be very happy. So they got one letter and it said, Jai Shri Radhe. I am now living in the holy land of Vrindavan. And I would tell them about how nice Jamuna was and how Radharani's mercy was very nice. They didn't know who was Radharani. What is Jamuna? After some time, I was away for about a year and a half. I wrote to them that I'm now living in one place in Vrindavan, one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers' mutts. I said I could receive mail there. So it was the first time in almost 2 years that they had a chance to write back to me. I wish I saved those letters. My father wrote me this letter. It was the most painful letter anyone could read. He was just explaining how much he was suffering, and there were teardrops all over the letter that were making the ink hard to read. And I don't remember everything he said, but I remember he signed off that I am on the verge of death in separation from you. And he said, your broken-hearted father. He was begging me throughout the letter to return home. And I also received a letter from my little brother. And he was chastising me so bad. He said, you are killing, you are murdering your parents. He said, your mother, she's simply crying and worrying constantly. Where is her son? Where is her son? And your father, all of his hair is turning gray. He stands in a daze. He's not even able to speak to people. He's practically immobilized, worrying about you, constantly asking different people, can you help me find my son? He said, you may not care anything for your mother and father, but we do. And if you don't come home, you'll never see them again because they will die. You are killing them. And I knew what he was saying was 100% true. However, I understood that life and all relationships in life are without a real basis, without understanding our connection to the source of all life, or God, or Krishna. So I went to this great sadhu, who was very dear to Srila Prabhupada, and I showed him these letters, and he said, this is part of the price of realization of Krishna. You have to be willing to do anything. So I wrote a letter back, and I said, I received your letter, and if you really want to see me so bad, then you should come to Vrindavan, but I will not come home. Now in those days the mail was very slow, so perhaps 2 weeks going, 2 weeks coming back. About a month later I received a letter. He said, this is very difficult. I've never been out of America in my life. To come to India to find Vrindavan, I don't know what to do, but if that's the only way to see you, I will come. So then I sent another letter to him telling him how to get to Vrindavan. But then by Krishna's arrangement, my visa had expired and I had to leave India. And said that, because India said I had to wait 6 months before I could come back. And I wrote to my mother and father and said that if you want, I can hitchhike back because I have no money. That may take me about 4 to 6 months. Otherwise, you can send me a plane ticket to the American Express office in Kathmandu, Nepal. So then from India, I went to Janakpur, Mithila, where Sita was born and where she married Lord Ram and spent Ram Nomi there. And later on, I went to Kathmandu. And sure enough, there was enough money for a plane ticket. So they were expecting me any day. A month later, because I spent a month in Mithila, they received a letter that I was at the Hare Krishna temple in Amsterdam because I wanted to gradually come back. And they sent me enough money. They have a house in Chicago and also an apartment in Florida. So my father had broken leg at the time, and they were both in Miami, Florida, waiting for me. So what happened is I flew from London, where I stayed at the temple for some time, to New York, and then I had just enough money for the connecting flight from New York to Miami. But as I got out of the immigrations and I was walking from one flight to another to purchase the ticket, I saw a devotee. His name was Ruchi Prabhu. He was a godbrother. And he was in the airport, and I saw him. He was with dhoti. And I had chadar. I still had long matted hair. And I went up to him. I said, "You are Hare Krishna devotee?" He said, "Yes, yes. All glories to Prabhupada." He says, "I want to see Prabhupada in Los Angeles. But I need..." He told me exactly how much money he needed for the ticket to get to Los Angeles. That was exactly how much money I had. So I was thinking, this must be Krishna's arrangement. So I gave it to him. So my parents were at the airlines waiting for me to come home. And after all these years, I didn't come off the plane. So they were more distressed. So they went home and I called them and I said I gave my money as a donation to someone. So now I have no money. If you want, I'll hitchhike down. So they somehow or other knew someone from airlines and got me another ticket. But that was only the beginning, because when I came home, you see, in years we get some more maturity. But when you're a young teenage person, sometimes very insensitive toward the reality of what you're doing to people's lives. So when I returned home, I was such a staunch ascetic. I was just doing austerities and fasting and doing bhajan all day long. And in India, I would never sleep inside. I would only sleep under trees, either in caves or in banks of rivers. So when I did come home, they took me to their home. It was an apartment. And I saw a carpet on the floor. This is sense gratification. And there's chairs and couches. I hadn't sit on a chair for years. This is sense gratification. And they even were watching television. So I was preaching to them that this is all Maya. They said, "What is Maya?" I said, "It is illusion." So I wouldn't sleep in their house. What floor is the apartment in Miami? Fourth floor. And outside there's a little, like a patio, that just sticks out of the building. About smaller than this. And it was just concrete where people go to get some sun. It was just a concrete ground. So I was sleeping on the concrete outside, because I wouldn't go in. Because I thought it was too much sense gratification to be in their house. So the first night I remember, I woke up and I had a little photo of Radha Krishna and Srila Prabhupada. And I brought some little RT paraphernalia from Vrindavan. And the patio was just outside the window of their bedroom. So at about 4 in the morning, they heard these bells ringing. My father, he woke up. What is these bells ringing? In America, no one hears bells ringing. And he came out to the patio, and my back was toward the door. And I was offering the deep, the ghee lamp, a little flame of fire, to the picture of Radha Krishna. This was 4 in the morning. That's normal for us, but not for Americans. So he said to me, "Son, what are you doing?" And I turned around and I said, "I am offering arti." Then I turned back and continued. And of course I couldn't eat any of the food they were making. And then I found out Prabhupada was coming to New York, so I hitchhiked to New York. And then ultimately I was in New Vrindavan. And they were so happy, at least they knew where I was for the first time in years. And they would come to New Vrindavan to try to visit me. It was so much endeavor. At one time I was pujari, and I lived on a mountain. It was about 6 kilometers. It was just a mud path. No vehicle can go up there. And they were elderly at that time also. And I remember my father wanted to see me, but because I was pujari, I couldn't leave the deities up there. So they said, "If you want to see your son, you have to go up the mountain to where he's living." I was all alone, worshipping Radha Vrindavanath. So in order to get up there, he couldn't walk because the mud was so deep. So they brought him an ox cart. It was an ox cart with the oxens were going to bring hay up. So they said, "If you want to come, you can sit on the hay." So he sat on the back, and it was because it's not a road, it's just going up a mountain. It took about almost an hour, and he was in terrible condition when he got up there. And it was cold. It was terribly cold and raining. There's no heat in the place. There's no chairs. I was all alone. I was so happy, I wanted to give him Mahaprasad, but we had no spoons or forks. He said, "How do I eat it?" I said, "You use your fingers." He has never heard. That is something no one has heard of. Anyways, he was up there, and I remember, he said, "Son, you have everything in the world to enjoy. What are you doing living here? What do you do all day?" Because it was in the middle of a dense jungle on the top of a mountain. Now it's been renovated, but in those days it was really a jungle. So I brought him to see the deities. And I said, "I serve them throughout the day and night." And tears came from his eyes. He said, "You mean all that we've given you all your life, you've decided to spend a whole life playing with dolls?" Because Americans don't know what deities are. So I explained, this is not a doll, this is Radha and Krishna. This is the Supreme Lord and His eternal consort. And I preached to him, and he was always trying to understand. My mother and father always tried to understand as much as they could, although it was incomprehensible to them according to their previous conditionings. And they always wanted to support me. And I can say through all that, they were always supportive, always trying to appreciate whatever I did, whether they understood it or not, and they really kept that word that they gave. So he spent the day up there. He had to go to the bathroom. There's no toilets. I said, "You have to dig a hole in the ground, and then you have to go like that." He said, "I'll wait till I get to the Pittsburgh airport." The person who was supposed to pick him up came hours and hours later, and the ox cart broke. So he brought horses, and what he came up with was the manure wagon, where all the horse manure and cow dung are put into this wagon and then spread into the fields. And they basically swept it out, but still it was full of manure. And they put a little hay down and said, "Mr. Slavin, you can sit here." And I remember saying to him as he was leaving, "I'm sorry, Father, I couldn't have offered you more." And with tears in his eyes, he looked around and he said, "What could you have offered me? There's nothing here." And then he went to Pittsburgh Airport. He flew to Chicago. And then a devotee came to sell him a book. I already gave him so many books of Srila Prabhupada. So he had already so many books. So he didn't need any more books. But he was thinking that, let me just show my appreciation for these devotees and help them by buying a book. So he said, "I only have $20. I'll give you $5 for the book, but I need the rest for the taxi to get home from the airport." That's actually all he had. So he gave, and the person said, "Yes, yes, I'll give you change." And then after he gave the book, he said, "Well, $20, the cost of the books is $30, so we'll just leave it at that." And he started walking away. So my father said, "Please, give me the change that you gave." And he reached out to try to have that devotee understand that he needed the money. As soon as he did that, another devotee from behind beat him with his fist behind the neck. And my father fell to the ground practically unconscious. 4 policemen saw it happen, and about 20 eyewitnesses. When he got up, the policemen had the devotees in handcuffs. Yes? And said, "These men are going to jail. We saw it. All these are eyewitnesses." My father, he was laying there, and he got up somehow, and he said, "No, no." He said, "My son is a member of these devotees, and it's a good movement. And these people may not be good, but they should not give a bad impression about this movement because it's good. So let them go." So they let them go. And for the next 6 months, he was in caste. So he did prove to me that whatever I did, he would always stand behind and support. And my mother and father, in America, it was such a cultural difference to understand Krishna consciousness that they could never really appreciate. They wanted to appreciate. They wanted to understand. They supported, but they could never really appreciate. They would even speak to others that this is a good movement, but in their hearts, they only saw many young people who were coming from another generation. Then, 10 years ago, we invited them to come to India. And when they came to India, the first program was at Srinathji's house on his terrace. And Krishna Chandra Prabhu and Radha Priya and Maithili Priya, they were so hospitable and welcoming them. I believe that first night completely transformed their hearts. It was the first time in their lives that they deeply, from the core of their hearts, appreciated Krishna consciousness and appreciated what I was doing for the world. Every night they were crying while they were in India. They were crying, saying, "Son, we're so proud of you. We're so proud of what you are doing. We appreciate so much. Now we can understand what you have done all these years. We could never understand it before." We went to Jaipur. Actually, in Radha Gopinath temple, my mother was dancing with Srinathji's mother. I was leading kirtan, and she was spinning around like this in front of Radha Gopinath. And I saw my father with his arms raised, running back and forth in the temple with the devotees chanting. I was thinking, is this a hallucination that they are chanting and dancing in front of the deities? But it was all of you that changed their hearts just by seeing you and hearing from you. We went to Jaipur. We took them to Radha Govinda temple. they bowed down in front of the deity, and the first thing, they took money and said, could we give this to Krishna? And as a ritual for Western tourists, we decided to take them to Taj Mahal, which they considered the most uneventful part of their whole journey. So we were driving from Agra to Delhi, where their flight was going from Delhi. It happened to be December 7th, which is my birthday. It was the first time in probably at least 20 years since I was with them on my birthday. So as we were driving, they said to me, we want to give you something for your birthday. Anything we have, just tell us. There's nothing we will not give you. Just tell us what we can give you on your birthday. And I knew they meant it. I said, very soon, we will be arriving in Vrindavan. The only desire I have, if you really want to give me a birthday gift, is you come to Vrindavan. And from the time we arrived in the outskirts of Vrindavan to the time we leave, you chant Hare Krishna with me. I will sing and you clap your hands and chant. So they said, yes, we will do. We arrived in Vrindavan in the car and I started the kirtan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Like that. We stopped the car in Vrindavan and I decided to take them to the sacred temples of Vrindavan. I told them they should take off their shoes because they had nice shoes and someone might steal them. So they were in their stockings. And the first step, my father, when he came out of the car, he stepped in a big pile of cow dung. Do you remember that? And his stocking was soaked with cow dung, up to his ankle. He said, what am I supposed to do now? I said, the cow dung is pure. And we somehow looked for some water where he could wash somewhere. But he was walking with a limp because he didn't know how to walk with cow dung on his foot. We went into the Radharaman temple, and for almost 1 hour, we just sat in front of the deity of Radharaman having kirtan together. And I thought this was some sort of a surrealistic hallucination. Sitting in Radharaman temple with my mother and father having kirtan in front of the deity. And they were chanting so sincerely. And then we were chanting down the streets, doing Harinam Sankirtan, the three of us, from temple to temple. Then my mother had to go to bathroom. I told them, the only place I know is in the forest. She said, I will wait till I get to Delhi. Do you remember? And then we went so many temples, Radha Govinda, Radha Raban, Radha Damodar. Then we went to Krishna Balaram temple and saw the samadhi of Srila Prabhupada and Krishna Balaram. There she found a bathroom. And she said, I like this temple the best. Because Prabhupada's temple was so clean and so beautiful and so full of life. They saw the devotees chanting and dancing in front of Krishna and Balaram. When we left Vrindavan, that was a wonderful birthday gift. Actually, the best birthday gift I think I ever received. To see you both chanting Krishna's names in the holy land of Vrindavan throughout the entire day. When I saw them off at the airport in Delhi, they were both crying. And they said, these were the most happy days we've had in our whole lives. And these devotees in Bombay were the best people, the kindest people we've met in our entire lives. Thank you very much. And the next time I came to America, all relatives who I haven't even seen in years, they were coming to tell me that your parents are so proud of you. They give us your tapes of your lectures. And they're constantly telling how proud they are of you and how happy and the good work you're doing and about all your friends in India. Then my brother, he was married and had his first daughter. My brother and his wife, and they were wondering how we should bless this child in the name of God. So my mother and father said that your brother is a holy priest and you should bless in a Krishna temple and your brother will do the blessings. In America they have baptism, you know. So they called me to Tucson, Arizona. My mother and father told them that you should have the child blessed in Krishna's temple by your brother. So they brought the baby to the Krishna temple in Tucson, Arizona. And I explained to them that the real blessing is when all the relatives chant the name of God, crying out for the blessing of God to come upon the child. So you should all chant with that sincerity. So all relatives were chanting. And my mother and father looked at the other relatives and said, we know how to do it. You just watch us. And it was unbelievable because my brother, I would never expect, and his wife's mother, they were all with their arms raised, just crying out the names of Krishna. And the little baby was sitting there. Then I sprinkled Ganga water on baby's head. And they wanted me to give her a spiritual name. Her name was Sarah, so we gave her the name Saraswati. Then the next grandson, same, my parents insisted that your brother should give blessings and he should get spiritual name and be blessed in the temple of Krishna. And this time they talked so many and showed people photos of the first time, so now more relatives came. Yes? So their previous trip to India really, really transformed their hearts. And I must say that it was a great satisfaction to my heart. After all the sacrifice and the affection they gave me throughout my life and all the pain and suffering I caused them, inconceivable that in the end they could actually understand what I was doing and appreciate. And not only appreciate, but participate. It's one of very wonderful moments in my life. And ever since that, they have been longing to return to India. Every year. They wanted to come some years ago, but my father needed heart surgery, so they couldn't come. Then they wanted to come another year, and my mother had needed hip surgery, so they couldn't come. But for year after year, it has been their great, great longing to be with all of you again. And somehow, by the grace of Lord Krishna, this morning they came again to be with all of us. This year is the 75th birthday for both of them. So my request is all of you pray to Krishna to give the most auspicious blessings to them. And please, after the program, everyone go up and give them your good wishes, meet with them. It is my humble request. And we'll be having programs the next three nights also. So there's much more I could say, but it is becoming late. But I did want to take some time to express my gratitude to both of you and my prayers that Lord Krishna may forever bless you with greater and greater happiness and devotion. And I especially want to thank all of you for your great kindness to me. Srila Prabhupada's mercy is so wonderful that all of our relationships and all of our activities can be transformed in the most fulfilling, satisfying way in Krishna service. Thank you very much.